But I'm just saying, I've been researching Black Lives Matter, and I've been understanding the politics and how they're funded by white liberals. And recently, I've been feeling like they're white liberals in blackface. Because they're white liberals in blackface. When I say that, it's because the white liberals is all about feminism, LGBT. White liberals don't really care about black people.
That's correct.
I realize white liberals don't really care about me, bro.
That's correct.
I'm off the plantation, bro. They don't want me to have power. They want to keep me dependent.
Hi there. Welcome, Kate Daly Show. This is my Friday. I got a couple of days off coming and some great reruns playing, and this is my Friday. And I want to tackle, Melissa's out this week, and Susan will join me next hour, but I welcome you to the show. Make sure you get over to Balance of Nature. Balance of Nature is awesome, isn't it? Boy, the process in which they take fruits and vegetables and dial them down for you so you get just the nutrients, pretty awesome stuff. I highly, highly recommend. You need to be taking a supplement. I would suggest you take this one. I did my homework on it. It's awesome. I love it. My husband loves it. Everyone I know that takes it loves it. And of course, you just have to put in the code KATE, K-A-T-E, my first name, and you can get 30% off and free shipping. All you have to do is go to balanceofnature.com. Yes, the testimonials are real. I know, they are. It's why they have them rotating all the time. They have new ones so often, so it's pretty cool. Balanceofnature.com. You will love this supplement, by the way. 31 fruits and vegetables a day. Okay, I'm going to blow some, hopefully some epic holes through racism today, because I think this part of the conversation is never talked about, right? So this is what happens. Every couple of years, because that was actually taken from last year. You guys remember that? With Candace Owens? That was Candace Owens and a guy that stood up at one of her rallies. So here's the problem. You get a group that is funded by communists like Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and they're violent groups that are paid to go out and raise havoc, okay? So you have these groups, and they're paid, and they are paid to promote the fact that we're a racist nation. And then what do we do? What's our reaction? We don't know what to say. We know there was slavery. We don't know what to say. We don't know enough facts. How do we go about this? What are we going to do about this conversation? Because if we don't know what to say back, if you don't understand our history, like many of us were not educated in this, and maybe what I'm about to say, you were never taught. Because when I'm looking at this, let me just tell you, I went back into the periodicals of the time. I went back into the 1800s and the 1700s to look at the tone and tenor of this nation and to say, okay, how do we really feel? What was really going on? And this, I think this hour might surprise you just a little bit. I just want you to know that in the height of slavery, okay, before the Civil War was, 1860s, okay? So this was 1840 and 1850. They did a census. And in the census came up the number of slaves in this country, primarily in the southern states. So it wasn't the entire nation, okay? Primarily in the southern states. And we had about anywhere from 17 to 28 million people. See, when the country, right after the country was formed, we had about 3 million. And it jumped up, took about 50 years, and it jumped up, and it went to 17 to 28 million, depending on what year in the 1840 to 1850 you were going to take the census. Okay, depending on what year. So you're looking at, let's go with 25 million people, okay? At the height of slavery, they had just under 3 million people in slavery of the 25, let's say, million people here, okay? And of those 3 million, close to 3 million, a million of them almost were infants, okay? You had about, and then you had the sick and the aged, and then so the actual labor force of slaves was about 1.6 million out of the whole country, okay? So those are the numbers that we're relatively dealing with here. So infants, 850,000, because they list them in the newspapers of the time, in the Lexington and in the newspapers in the southern states. I know. I'm looking at them right now. The sick, you had 150,000, the aged, 100,000. So you had 1.6 million. And this is the height of slavery that were the labor force that we're talking about really and truly today. And not to say that the babies and the old people, didn't suffer as slaves. I'm just saying that when they talk about the labor force, when they're talking about that, that's the number they're talking about. So I've heard figures, 10 million, 20 million, and that's not true. That's just simply not true. And so I'm just saying this is where we were at this time, for those that don't know. And it was, between the states of, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Kentucky. Okay, those were primarily the states. And then Virginia's newspapers spoke out a lot. In fact, even in the early, let's just put it this way. I went back all the way to the creation of the country. And the dialogue in the country was really interesting because there was a lot of dialogue about this. This wasn't a topic that was reserved for, let's say, just prior to the Civil War. And I think that a lot of people, this is the narrative that they're told. Everyone loved slavery, and then Abraham Lincoln came along and he abolished it. And there's nothing that could be further from the truth than that, as far as that narrative goes. Yes, he took part in that with the Civil War, but that wasn't the reason that we went to war. Okay. Now you could say, well, Kate, it was slave labor with the cost of cotton and the exports of cotton and the money we were making, because it was about money more so than slavery. Yes, slavery was part of that because they were making the goods. So you could say that slavery was definitely a part of that, because cotton was one of the big manufactured products, right? Southern states made a lot of money off of that. But here's the deal. When you go into the editorial sections, when you go into the articles written, a lot of ministers of the day, because ministers of the day in the 1800s specifically, in 1700s, were that's who everybody went to, right? And so they would speak up and they would say things on this topic. And the debates were so fascinating to me that I would like to share a couple of points with you, because I don't think we realize how much it was debated. How much we looked at the states and said, okay, there's these southern states, and we know that this is how the money train is driven through labor like this, and they're making, quite a bit of money down there. But it was amazing to see Americans all over, and a lot in the northern states, that were firmly against this and wrote about it consistently from when the ink was dry on the Constitution. So the minute the ink was dry, and even before, we were still debating this. And they were having talks about the fact that, this is how Benjamin Franklin felt, and this is how George Washington felt, and this is why the documents were signed the way they were. This is why it said all men created equal. And so we were in a state of constant debate over this. I can't even tell you. Even if you just picked out a couple of dates like I did, just to kind of peruse just these years, 1810, 1790, 1750, 1790, 1810, and then up into 1840, 1850, and then, of course, 1860s, to kind of see where we were at. And what I found was such a great dialogue, a very intellectual dialogue, actually, one that we wouldn't have now. Because of our ignorance in history, the emotion that it is drawn the quickest and the fastest would be anger. You're supposed to be angry. You're supposed to be mad. You're supposed to be so angry about this. But I'm telling you, from the moment the ink was dry, there was a huge push for people to oust slavery. And I think that that's really, really important to know. And so I'll go through some of these discussions. But honestly, I think even being given the number of the true number we're really talking about is very, very important. One third usually of the labor force was children. And of course, and this is how they listed it clear back in 1850, 10,000 imported Africans survive in the southern states. About 2.5 million slaves are connected with the work of agriculture. In every 100, of whom 2 are employed upon hemp, 5 upon rice, 5 upon, 14 upon tobacco. There are 347,000 families holding slaves in the entire country. 347,000 families were the holders of all the slaves. So they had multiple slaves usually in one family, you know, in one family plantation. But that's about what it looked like. 347,000 families. So when they're asking for reparations now and things like that, it's kind of amazing that these numbers are not cropping up a little bit more in the conversation, just to make it more real and sort of, now wait a minute, what was the actual number? Because it honestly, some of the articles make it look like there were many, many more. Many, many more. And so I'm just trying to be fair with the truth. Right? There were about 726,000 persons born in the free states, now living in slave states, right? And at that time. And when I come back, I want to share with you some of the conversations, because I think these are important. And it listed from all the countries, by the way. It was really interesting. 278,000 from England, 70,000 from Scotland, 29,000 from Wales and Great Britain and Ireland, 1.8 million. And you have to consider that a lot of them were slaves as well. And did you know that a huge portion of the immigrants that came in the 1700s all came to win back. So they were slaves for a time, either teaching school or cleaning homes or caring for children until they could earn their freedom here to pay for their voyage to get over here. So there was a huge mix of all colors that were in that capacity. I'll be right back on the Kate Daly Show, and I'm sharing with you from the archives of the news itself at the time. I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Cross the river that night. Sure as hell at sundown came 100,000 men. And it sure did shock me, Lord, to see kin killing kin. The cannonballs were heavy, filled with iron and steel and lead. And the James River water ran a bloody red.
Jennings, right? No matter where you're listening to, I'm giving you some country. Welcome back to the show, a song about the Civil War, because this seems to be where cities everywhere are taking down statues, changing names, doing all kinds of things, and all in the name of we're a racist nation. And I want to poke some holes in that narrative today and give you the real numbers and the tone and tenor of that time, because I think it's that important. And so welcome back to the show. I am going to play a little Walter Williams, too, on the Confederate flag. Very interesting piece. I love him. Black man who really calls things out and talks a lot of truth. So I went over the numbers, and there was about 347,000 families that owned slaves in America at the height of what would be considered our population in slavery before the Civil War happened. And I also want to say that... that through this, there was a lot of people with a lot of different ideas and a lot of, let me put it this way. When they were writing articles about this in the early 1800s, These are the kinds of things they wrote about in the local papers. And I'm going to read to you from, I'm actually going into the archives of the newspapers and I'm giving you this. This is not my hypothesis. Here's one. As the passages in scripture, this is what they wrote in the newspaper, to prove that Hebrews held slaves, they did not prove that such slavery was a God-given institution. It was not an emanation from God. Moses's government was a theocracy, and every law began, thus saith the Lord, just as in some of the states, instruments began by the grace of God, amen. It was not a divine institution. There are many others which were adopted with expediency and error. And it goes on to talk about Christianity and slavery, because you have to understand, even in the centuries past, they recognized that slavery had been. White people were enslaved. The Romans enslaved. We had a lot of slavery going on for many, 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 many centuries. And in the 1700s, when they were coming over here, and in the 1600s, people were allowed to serve themselves up as a slave for a specific amount of time, usually about 8 years, and they could earn it in servitude. And so when you're surrounded by this, when you see people of all different types and religions and everybody coming over, and the acceptance of that, well, a lot of people did not see what was wrong with it. Okay. And it really, truly wasn't until the 1600s when that black man who won his freedom from servitude and getting in coming over here actually went to court and said, I want to own a black man for life. And the court did change that. It wasn't a white man requesting that. Servitude was usually done in the way of you get to earn it, and then you you get a few things and you're on your way. So in almost a decade. So they had a lot of writings about Christianity and what God wanted, and that he was against the slavery of anybody, which was very correct. It was very correct that they wrote about this. But why did they write about it? They wrote about it because they had to change hearts and minds. Because they had to get people to understand that if you were going to be a slave owner and you were going to church on Sunday, you had to come to a point where you sort of rectified that and said, now, wait a minute, what am I doing here? What am I doing? Is slavery supposed to be something that is okayed by God? Okay. And then you had people that were debating in print some of these other ideas, because they honestly, the conversations, if we had 2 hours, I'd go through them, but they would say, hey, it's perfectly legal and you'll be protected in the enjoyment of your property. You are no longer to regard them as sentient beings. You are to deprive them of education, except, you know, and you can do whatever you want to them. That is not what God would want. So it was really talking to a lot of people to say, I know you either are maybe turning a blind eye to this, or maybe you don't want it outright, or maybe you are one of these that we're talking to. But the article was about don't say monster, monster to somebody and then go pray and then act like you're a wonderful person, because something's very wrong with this equation. Okay. So there was article after article like this in the early 1800s. And then it kind of came to this point where there were these letters in 1845. And here's what the letter said. This was in Fayette County, June 15th, 1845. Our children are raised without being taught to labor. They think more of ordering than of executing. And in fine, the children of the wealthier portion of the community know nothing about the more ordinary business of life when they come to manage for themselves, or the cultivators of the soul. And they must look at some old trusty slave for instruction. That is not right. And yet it will be thus as long as slavery lasts. And they were mostly talking about slavery in the southern states. Okay. It's where this took place. So let slavery cease, and then the children will be raised and taught to earn their daily bread, and then look upon duty, labor as a duty and no disgrace. The parents will then have less cause to weep for the misconduct of the misfortunes of children. And husbands and wives will know how to work. They'll be working side by side. Okay. And sometimes all people had was to offer themselves up into slavery for payment. And so you have a mindset going on during this time that people really, there was so much debate about this, and it had, nothing to do with the conversation we have today. You're a hater. No, I'm not. You're a hater. No, I'm not. You know, you're a racist. No, I'm not. They were actually discussing what God's view was, the object of work. How are we going to have a line of distinction drawn? How are we going to teach work ethic? How are we going to reflect about this in the future? How do we stop this? Because this country was supposed to be something different. And so as soon as the ink was dry, they were basically saying freedom is the gift of God. Freedom is the gift of God. And this was being taught in the churches. They had 38,000 churches, by the way, 50 years into the country, 38,000 churches, lots of churches. And so people were teaching these things. And this comes from the Lexicon True American. This comes from Kentucky. This comes from all over the place. Okay. And then there was a reverend, a white reverend, and he said, in the spirit of the age, this is Reverend A. Barnes, in the spirit of the age and the points of elevation which we have gained in the progress of events are against the institution of slavery. And that institution is destined certainly to fall. It is a system at variance with the unsettled, with the settled views of mankind and with principles now established, and from which our race is not to go backward. Everything which has been developed in the long track of ages and in the revelation of God about the essential equality of man, the fact that all are of one race, that the same blood has been shed for human redemption, and that the same heaven is open for all, is against this institution. You have to remember, this was the first country, the real country, that had freedom of religion. And these were the things that were being said in the churches on this land. On this land. Everything he said that will be established about the dignity of man, the nobleness of the soul, the honor of human nature, and the distinction between intellect and matter, between man and the brute, is against the existence of this institution, every blow that has been struck in the cause of liberty. Either taught by the struggles of the Puritans for freedom here, is against the freedom of this institution. Every common school, academy and college in the land, and all the views we have adopted. The human mind, as such, has a right to instruction, all that is sacred, and the right of trial by jury, and all of our views, of the and the views of the very accused, to be taken in. So if these were the conversations going on in our churches, if this is what we were talking about in our country, how in the world were we a racist nation? Were there racist people? Certainly. Were we a racist nation? Certainly not. You know why? Because it didn't take 100 years here to have these conversations. These conversations started in about and recorded really about 1790, several years after ratification. That's what's important to know here. And I surely hope that we can understand who we really are as a country, because we're losing that because we don't know this. We're not going back into the archives and looking at these wonderful, wonderful conversations that they were having. The debate was simply amazing. The debate alone, they were so fiercely trying to come to, how do we change a mindset that has been approved for so long? How do we get generations to do something different? Well, it took a few generations to do that, like it always would. But what I really value here is that when you go back into the journals from everyone that came from Scotland and Germany and Holland and you name it, they came from everywhere. The first thing that they valued here was religious freedom. Okay? It's the reason they came. 1600s, right? 1500s. It was religious freedom. Then it was about freedom. Then it was about freedom. And when we got closer to the Civil War, the conversation was then about, in fact, really, truly, at the turn of the century, when we were doing the Revolutionary War, I should say, The Revolutionary War became all about freedom. It was all about freedom for everybody. This is why those conversations took place so early. At first, it was about taxation and government. Then it just became about freedom. So setting the stage for the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence that preceded it set the stage for the religious freedom and the churches to teach these things. They could not be taught anywhere else. They simply couldn't be taught. They were so vocal. They were printing it in newspapers. You opened up your front page, you got a sermon on the Hebrews. You got a sermon on slavery. Because this is what they were trying to do, was to change generations and centuries of thinking. When you have people serving themselves up for servitude to come here, you have to change this mindset, right? But it was going on in a lot of different countries. Peru finally passed a constitution that said, okay, you cannot be a slave in our country. So lots of different countries were at the same time starting to go, oh, okay, we're going to stop this. But it was the religion, when people were fleeing here to get the religious freedom, the bulk of these conversations actually happened in church to change hearts and minds. Because church was the social activity. And it was, what sect do you belong to? Where are you from? And what church do you go to? And so everything set the stage for everything else. Why do you think it was eradicated early on, right? With the Civil War. That actually happened pretty quickly if you think about it. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Love that song. By the way, welcome back to the show. I will take a couple of calls in just a moment. I wanted to read this, though. This was in the same newspaper of the Slavery Must Cease by Reverend A. Barnes, who was white, by the way. I know. See, people have a hard time hearing that, man. There were many, many people in the United States that were already on this early on. But this is what it says. It says, when one reads in the convention, this is in the front page of the newspaper, when one reads in the convention for forming the Constitution and in the state conventions for its adoption, how undoubting was the expectation that under the effect of its principles and provisions, slavery was soon to die. And how little was it dreamed by the people of that day that it was never to be an active element in the politics of the country. And so it goes on to talk about how even when we had a population of 3 million voters in the country, how things were already turning. They were already talked about changing. They knew they would be changed. This is why George Washington said, you know, I will be the one, I will actually free my slaves. We're going to do this. And it really was about religious freedom as well, wrapped up into this. There were certain things that I think allowed the conversations to take place. And I think that if we don't say that, we're missing such a huge part of this conversation. I really do. All right, I'll take a couple of callers. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Thank you for the history lesson, but I think when you look at this, slavery is just a part of an issue, which is actually classism. It's a class issue. Mm-hmm. And when you get right to it, that's what the issue was. You can differentiate somebody by color, but what you're really doing is you're putting people in economic classes is mm-hmm. what you're doing.
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of a given.
Somebody as mm-hmm. a slave, mm-hmm. then you can, but you're still going to have white people who are still going to then in the South, mm-hmm. they're just above that slave. Mm-hmm. And the reason you're going to make the slave the person that white person doesn't like mm-hmm. is to keep him in his class.
Well, that's
so that
why
they don't come after you.
Right.
The rich guy.
Yeah, that's why I brought up the article about teaching the children to work and all these different angles, because there was a lot of discussion. It wasn't just one type of discussion on this. There were a lot of things that were shining a light on classism. You're right. Absolutely. I thought that was kind of a given. But yes, I mean, it was different classes.
This is the next eruption that's going to happen in this country.
You're right.
In less than 30 days, they're going to lose the unemployment checks that are giving people who are protesting $1,000 a week right now on average.
Mm-hmm.
And when that goes away, you're going to get the Occupy Wall Street type of people coming mm-hmm. out again. And it's going to be then a class warfare type of riot that you're going to have now. Just like they were trying to go on to that household of those individuals, it wasn't because they were white. It's because they had more money. They represented something they didn't have. Why did they go down to Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why were they in Provo?
Yeah. Yep.
They're going to go that direction next.
Yep. Why did they turn?
And that's going to happen. And we got to be ahead of that curve mm-hmm. and talk about classism. And who keeps that going? The Democrat Party does.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party is the party of the middle class that destroys classism.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrat Party is split. Most middle class people are not Democrats. They're Republicans.
Balance of Nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I started Balance of Nature, I think, the beginning of this year, and I just had my 6-month follow-up on my blood work. Oh my gosh. When the doctor's office called me, they were so impressed with the changes in my levels. It's hard to get a doctor excited, but when my doctor saw the blood work, she was excited. So I got to credit the fruits and veggies, you know, Balance of Nature. And considering what I've seen in the blood work, it's well worth the cost.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com. And make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code KATE.
The Democrats tend to be inherited wealth and people who are in dependency class.
Right.
And that inherited wealth is the wealth that the dependency class wants to go after. And the Democrats know that if we continue to keep a dependency class, mm-hmm. we keep those people from coming after us.
Yep, I get it. Thank you very, very much. The reason I'm focused on what I'm focused on, though, is because a lot of people don't know if we were a racist nation or not. That was the whole point of me bringing all that up. And if they're going to present an argument like that, I want people to be at least armed with the truth in the fact that that is not what we were about as a nation, the goal of a nation. That was not what the nation was about. Now, with that being said, because that's really the focus of the hour, yes, classism is definitely the future conversation now. Because if you have a thriving country, it's kind of like back in the 50s. Everyone was doing actually pretty well, right? They were making about $3,000 a year. And people were, they're getting jobs and manufacturing, and things were going pretty well. How do you tear a nation down? You develop the poor class, the welfare class, because at the time they could only go into to really bad sections of like Mississippi to where they had people that were truly, truly in need. This is why you'll never hear about the starving in America, because in a land of plenty like this, that's really, truly not the narrative, but they pretty much were creating the narrative. And this was a lot of the Democrat Party creating the narrative. You have to create a problem in order to solve a problem, and classism will surely be the new issue, because in order to have, if you're Black Lives Matter and you're Antifa and your whole goal is to bring in communism, right? And the road socialism to get to communism, then it's all going to be about the haves and have nots, right? It's all going to be about classes, because that's the only direction that that can go in. But right now in America too, you have a lot of people that don't even know our own American history enough to answer the question of racism. That's a problem to me. We have a really, really big problem with that. All right, I'll take a caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Yeah, a couple of comments on what you've said. Very interesting, very informative. First of all, the figure should be reduced. Indentured servitude is not slavery, never was slavery. It's independent contract labor. Mm-hmm. Those people entered freely into the contract.
Yeah.
That if you take me out of this cesspool of Europe,
give
me to the new world, after I'll work for you for 6 years, and then I have my freedom.
Okay, wait. Not always, no. In fact, many times they were just brought over, and then they were told that they could do servitude to earn it. They really couldn't get back. So there was that group, that's fraud, too.
And that's slavery. But the indentured itself is not slavery.
Okay, but
so you were talking about them being fraudulently claims that they went into a contract and then they violated the contract.
I realize. I realize it's a contract, but the point is it's also a mindset too, that at the time, there were a lot of people that turned kind of a blind eye to slavery because there was indentured servitude. There was these things going on. There were people that were brought over as a labor force that were told they had to earn it for a decade when they brought them here against their will. So you had a whole different, you had all kinds of elements that played into this.
Right, and what you're discussing is slavery. We have to separate the two out.
I think everybody can do that.
The main point is really important here. This is extremely important. All of what you've said is a moot issue to what's going on today, completely moot, because that is not America today. We do not have slavery, anything like what went on prior to the Civil War
in America. That's not why I brought
it up. So when people argue that we have to do these things because of slavery in the past, it doesn't matter how much slavery you had, if you had 50 million slaves. It's not today. And the ideology of America is founded upon individualism. We have protect individual rights.
Mark. A lot of people don't know this. There was a reason I was going with this.
Whether slavery occurred in the past or not has no bearing on all that's going on today, tearing down the statues and on, changing names from Dixie to something else. That is all in the past. We have rights today. Mm-hmm. If you look at this from an individual rights perspective, then none of that slavery has anything to do with it. Now, what is happening today is all of us are, to some extent, slaves in America, where the average person works more than half the year through all of the hidden taxes and so forth for the government through coercion and force.
Okay,
so
that's
that's the argument of slavery today.
I understand. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. There's a reason I brought this up today. There is a reason that they keep saying this. And I know that the goals behind these groups are much deeper. We've been over this on the show, but we've not really attacked this so much as to say, out of the archives, this is America. This is what we believed in. This is what we were about. Some people might have this understanding, but there are a lot of people out there that have a blank look. When these groups go with the surface issue, they don't even know how to broach it. They don't even know what to say. They don't even know what to think because they were never taught anything that I just covered. Okay? There was a reason I went over this. I promise. This show really tries to shine a light on all of history. Of course we've talked socialism. Of course we've talked why statues are being brought down. Of course we've talked about the bigger goals, the deep state, the establishment, what the pure goals are. We get it. We've done those shows so many times, but I had never really gone into the archives to discuss what the tone and tenor of this nation has been since the creation of this nation. And I really wanted people to understand that. So, to the two callers, your point's well taken. I get it. But this hour was about something different, and it was about those people that don't know what to say when you have these people stuck on the surface conversation. Because if you can get through the surface conversation and you know what you're talking about, then when you get into the deeper stuff, then you can have the deeper conversation. So, of course, in our future, which we talk about so much on the show, it's going to be socialism, classism, enslavement of a whole different kind. Something that Americans are not used to if we're not careful. But if we don't even know our history, there are so many white people that are kneeling and so many white people sitting there with their fist up and don't even know the history of our nation. They can't even go to the 1800s, pick anything out. They don't know. Sometimes it's kind of healthy to go back into the archives and say, what were the steps of this nation? What delivered us from certain things, right? And we know that servitude is different than slavery. We've been over that too. So I know that this audience is well equipped on that as well. And but it's still a mindset. There's still a mindset there. And there was a mindset through centuries past. And so to be able to say that this country was supposed to mean something different and did is a conversation that just doesn't even happen in our schools. It doesn't happen in our textbooks. They like to focus on big, bad, awful nation that stole it from the Indians and then were mean to black people. That's the narrative your kids are told. That isn't what happened. It's not a fair narrative. So that's why I love to go through and be reminded, I think, is what it is for me, to be reminded, and hopefully for you, that when you're teaching your kids, remind them that people fled here for many reasons. They were brought here or fled here. And when they were, when they came here, it was all about leaving everything they knew for religious freedom. And within the confines of religious freedom, many things developed out of that. And so there was a lot of great debates and conversations that went on in the minds of men for about 100 years that were awesome, that happened here, that need to be talked about. And I think that's important. So I can't tackle every issue in 1 hour of the show every day. it's just impossible. So in this hour, I thought I would tackle that a little bit more, going into the celebrating our Independence Day and our Independence Day from oppression for all. That is so important. Independence from oppression for all. Whether it took a little while to change hearts and minds, whether people came here and right from the get-go, whatever the case may be, that's what this land stood for. So when we hear the songs and see the fireworks and are involved in the shows, I sure hope we remember that it was to end tyrannical oppression for all, that we cannot have future tyrannical oppression like we have right now going on with COVID and everything else. We can't let these people get stuck on the surface issues that we were not that nation, because it's untrue. And when I'm celebrating and I'm looking at that flag and I'm singing those songs, this is what I'm singing about. This is what I'm about. And this is why I love doing what I do, is so that we can have a clear and more full understanding of what this country stands for. I'll be right back with Susan on the show, and we'll take your calls. We got a lot to talk about as well, and be right back.